How cultures around the world celebrate death with booze.
The UK is tired of BrewDog's bullshit.
Cyber attack halts Duval. The computers are taking your beer.
This is It's All Beer. Welcome to It's All Beer, the last bastion of real truth in a post-truth world. The trick is to just talk about something that nobody gives a shit about and assumed was long since dead, and the information you find is actually pretty factual because no one can be buggered to make a lie about it. I'm Jeremy Jones.
I'm Tyler Zimmerman, and man, you're really doom-scrolling right now.
It was a slow week for beer news, so I had to like
look. Dude, it was fucking rough for me.
So I had to look at the real news, and I wouldn't suggest that. I don't.
Bad idea.
It's basically an exercise in okay, so we're fucked. we've reached the logical endpoint of humanity, and that's good to know.
Let's just hit the nukes, restart, and go back to the barter system in a nuclear wasteland.
Sweet. So you brought beer.
I did. So if you haven't picked up now, we're back live in the beer cave. And we're going light beers today, so...
What brought... except for one dark lager, but...
Yes, I wasn't referring to fucking color. Fuck you.
Oh, you're pulling the old founders. I don't see color.
Yeah,
it didn't work for them.
Actually, it did. It did.
Not as well, I think, as they'd hoped. But we're starting off with the Odell pills.
Yeah, it's a new one I hadn't had before, so I was like, ooh. And then I was like, you know what? Let's stick with like lager and pills. So
I have had it, and my opinion of it. Now it was then like, yeah, that's a pilsner.
Yep.
That's nice. It's light. It's crisp. It's
kind of what I expected from Odell on a nationwide distributed pils.
It's a solid pilsner.
Nothing that's going to blow me away. I was talking to someone and they said they thought they used a new like exclusive hop for them, but I couldn't find anything on it.
Okay. And if they did, it tastes, well, let me see here. Now that I got that earworm in my head,
tastes so much better.
Oh yeah, now I'm getting like it's like spicy, maybe a touch of like tropical fruit in there, but otherwise just tastes like kind of those spicy, slightly floral German hops that you'd kind of expect in a pilsner. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't say on their website. It just says, after 6 years of R&D and over 100 test batches, our obsession has finally arrived.
That's a lot of work for a pilsner.
Right?
So we
add whole flower hops to our hop back to preserve the delicate essential oils of a new hop variety of noble descent. Does not say what hop variety.
But, I mean, it's derived from noble hops, so nothing that...
My life's mission now is to find what this hop is. Because if it's not something impressive...
What would it have to be for you to feel complete in this search?
Something like, I've never heard of.
Okay. Maybe it's anchovy. Still the dumbest hop I can on the face of the planet.
You know what? I like it.
I like, no, the flavor is nice. The name is stupid.
I like the name.
Because you're an idiot, too.
Wow.
That's where we're at. Just open hostility.
You're making this divorce awkward, Jeremy. Okay, Jeremy, on that note of being an asshole, what do we got to start?
Speaking of assholes, BrewDogs is collapsing news now. Or is it? I actually got some questions and no real answers, to be honest.
There are... Prolapsing asshole?
No, I think that's demonstrably true. But what effect it's had on business, that gets a little bit fuzzy. This is less of a singular event, more of a wrap up of really a kind of a career of assbaggery, and why it appears to be wearing thin on the public at large, especially those in Britain. This comes from Vine Pair by Will Hockey. And it's headlined, How Brits Got Bored of BrewDog. Although, to be fair, there's not a lot in this article that suggests that there's been a massive backlash in a way that could actually hurt the brewery by, say, people not buying their beer.
Oh, so kind of like how everyone said Bud Light's going bankrupt because the whole...
You know.
Puck, what do all, like, the Bud distributors call it? The event?
The event, yes. Yeah. So keep in mind, as of right now, BrewDog is still a private company. More on that later, but... So their financial disclosures are
shaky at best.
Yeah. So the best information I could find comes from the Scottish Financial News, which just feels so uptight that I almost just reading it, I felt the need to cram a stick up my own kilt. The article was dated from June 6th of last year, and it said the brewery faced another loss for the third straight year. It claimed...
Welcome to craft beer.
It claimed $1.1 million in pre-tax profit in 2019, but lost $12.5 million in 2020, which was a rough year for all of us, let's be honest. $9.4 million in 2021. And finally, $30.5 million in 2022.
Fuck!
Now, that's British pounds, not dollars, but as of this recording, it was...
British pounds are more than dollars.
Well, I'll say it was $1.25 to the pound, so just port it over, it's fine. Here's the thing. Though they were down in 2022 by a record amount, their revenue was up 12% despite the loss. And most of the losses over the past years are attributed to rising energy and material costs due to the war in Ukraine, not people pissed off or checking out because the CEO can't help but fuck on a roof.
So they are just terrible at setting their fucking pricing and managing their margins.
And it could also be that the increased revenue is not from increased sales, so to speak. It could be from
increase in price. And
right. So, fair enough. Like, I mean, if energy, you could pass that on to the customer, but how much do you pass on before, you know, that drives them away? It's...
Yeah, but also, how often are you going to sell a beer at a fucking loss before you're no longer selling beer?
So far, 3 years and counting. So again, if people have had enough of BrewDog, it may or may not be affecting sales. And it seems to be, according to the article, expressing itself in a much more powerful and impactful form for a business, namely people making snide comments on social media.
Or this podcast.
This is sort of social media. It's just you and me and, you know, anybody.
Like 8 listeners.
Yeah, pretty much. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hi, Ben. Hi, Andres. Hi, Jake.
I forgot to name all of our... Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron. That covers everybody, really. Yeah,
at least the ones I know of.
That's like, this is also the our listener appreciation episode where we name you all by name. I'm not sure if Greg still listens. Hi, Greg. But let's dip into all things BrewDog for a moment and try to suss this out. Being loud and obnoxious is kind of BrewDog's thing. They're very much the stone brewery of the UK in that they claim to be all anti-corporate and anti-establishment. But if you so much as say, dude, I'm so stoned at the brewery, and you're not chugging an arrogant bastard at the time, expect a cease and desist forthwith. We're all anti-establishment, man, so long as that message helps improve our standing with stockholders, especially reflects especially well in our portfolio. I won't get into all of BrewDog's antics in their heyday, although I did find an article from cityam.com highlighting 7 of BrewDog's weirdest publicity stunts from 2018. The article was in 2018, which is around the end of their heyday, so I feel like it's a pretty good list. Let's just go over those. Number 1, the dead squirrel bottles. We've talked about this at length. It's still one of my favorite fucked up stories of craft beer. Tyler, do you want to...
I mean, they were in a pissing contest with another brewery to see who could make the highest ABV beer. Jeremy and I have argued at length over whether it was actually beer when it came out at 55% alcohol or if you were just buying whiskey. But that's a whole nother argument on another day. But they then decided, because they ice distilled a Belgian blonde ale, if I remember correctly, down to 55%. Only came out with like 700 bottles and decided to put the bottles inside a taxidermied squirrel, because if you're going to pay that much for a bottle of beer at 55%, might as well make it funky.
What I didn't know is that that's not the only taxidermied animal they had have employed in dispensing of beer.
Ooh.
They followed up in 2011 and had a 28% beer served from a mounted stag's head. Like
ran the draft system
yes.
through? Oh, fuck yeah.
There's a picture of that. I haven't decided whether that or even more disturbing picture shall be the cover of this podcast. But yes, this is a thing. They serve their beer through dead animals, but only their really like strong best beer.
Fuck yeah.
Number two, it airdropped stuffed fat cats carrying the prospectus for a round of Equity for Punks.
Yep.
On the City of London, Westminster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is adorable. They list their number three on their list was the Pink IPA branded as Beer for Girls, which is not so much a radical stunt as it's
pandering.
Well, it probably came from a good place, but it was horribly executed. It's kind of a way to say, hey, ladies, we know you don't typically like beer, but we put this pink label on it, and we wrote Beer for Girls, so it'll help ease your tiny, fragile lady brains.
And then we upcharge because there's a pink tax.
Again, less a stunt, more just kind of regretful branding and not really thinking that through. Also, they got hit by, because the Beer for Girls does imply children. So they actually did get hit with trying to market to children. So it was kind of came from two sides that really wasn't ideal. Now, this one I do like. Number four on their list, they produced a novelty beer for Prince William and Kate Middleton's royal wedding called Royal Virility Performance and included the ingredients Herbal Viagra and Horny Goat Weed.
Yeah!
So well done there. Five, they shipped a box of beer to Vladimir Putin in 2014 called Hello, My Name is Vladimir, and a warning on the bottle that said it wasn't for gays in protests of Moscow's crackdown on homosexuality preceding the 2014 Olympics.
That didn't age too well.
I
for firing, like, LGBTQ people, and then people seeing that.
Well,
like, taken out of context, it looks bad.
On the same vein, the CEOs Matt Dickey and James Watt. This is number six. Dressed
it's
up
Martin,
as,
isn't it? Pretty sure it's Martin Dickey.
Martin Dickey. I don't know why I wrote Matt. You're right. Martin Dickey and James Watt dressed up as homeless people, selling themselves at a garage sale and then posing in a red light district prostitute window wearing a bra and panties, all in a promotion. For another line of the Equity for Punks with the hashtag "Don't Make Us Do This," the joke, of course, being that that if you don't buy into them, they're going to be forced to prostitute themselves legally, though, as they do in the red light district in Amsterdam. People lost their shit over this because they felt it targeted homeless people and of course. And
hookers
and sex workers and trans people. Now that one is a little. It's like
that's a reach.
Yeah, it's kind of like no, they're. Was that a tasteless joke? Yeah,
but they were being bro-y.
Yeah, beer. They're worst you could say is like kind of well, like maybe don't do that. But also on the other side, relax a little bit. I don't think there's real any harm. Committed there. Number seven, they brewed an actual beer with anabolic steroids called Never Mind the Anabolics, which is a nod to the Sex Pistols, and as a jab towards athletes cheating with steroids. They obviously didn't sell this beer for obvious reasons, although they did sell a version containing creatine, guana, ginseng, and other herbal supplements. They do random shit, is what I'm saying, and they get into the odd bit of trouble, which also is very much on brand, I think. stirring up controversy as part of the allure.
I mean, that's basically been their MO from day one.
A lot of this went through a public relations firm named Manifest. They were responsible for the homeless sex worker fiasco, for example, and admit that it wasn't as received with as much enthusiasm as they intended. But their whole thing was, you guys go out and, you know, change craft beer. We'll get people talking about you. That relationship ended in 2019, as we've talked about in previous episodes. We did in episodes 97, 103, and 109. I think we've laid out most of this story, but bottom line, BrewDog asked for a design for their new line of NA beers. Manifest provided proofs. BrewDog rejected those and then used them to as the labels anyway, which is, I mean,
frowned upon.
That is almost like classic cheap ass rich guy move. It's that level of really, guys. Mm-hmm. So, some other things the article brings up we haven't talked about. In 2015, a New Zealand brewery called Yeasty Boys. Yeasty Boys is their name. So, to be fair, I think whatever happens next feels justified in a way. I can't pinpoint it. But, you know, it has to do with BrewDog, so they're going to get screwed over. But they did voluntarily call their brewery Yeasty Boys. So.
Hey, you know, I respect it, man. You got to fight for your right to party.
Anyway. They launched in the UK, and BrewDog decided to contract brew for them. In 2017, they very abruptly shut down the deal, saying, we're done contract brewing. And the smaller brewery was kind of, you know, out of New Zealand, was kind of forced to let it go because it's fucking BrewDog. Mm-hmm. You know, criticizing BrewDog at the time was not going to get you anywhere. And so they kind of just like, oh, well, all right. And that just kind of went away. They talked about there's some hurt feelings on that end.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, and it did sound like BrewDog said, okay, we're done now.
We're over this.
Yeah. But things really went downhill in 2017 when BrewDog sold a major chunk of the company to a private equity firm. You know, the way punks do. Famously getting in bed with shady hedge fund operations, which raised some serious questions about the actual value of equity for punks, which was the crowdsourcing program that basically allowed anybody to invest in the company. And this was their desire to go public further brought this in question, and it really hammered in, like, what are you really doing this for? It's complicated, but essentially it works like this. So there's a company starting up. You like them. You like their vibe. The owner has a weird rooftop fetish, but whatever.
But so do you, so.
So, yeah. So you're like, who doesn't like banging on a roof? You know, it's... he convinces you to invest, say, 10 grand or whatever. A non-insignificant amount for you. So now the rooftop fetishist in question tells you that his company is worth $1 million. So for your 10 grand, you now own 1% of the company. I am totally making up these figures here. BrewDog has upwards of 200,000 equity for punk investors, but the math is easy, so stay with me. So you buy into the company. You give them your 10 grand. The problem is that although the tar shingle pervert in question told you that his company was worth $1 million and thus that you own now 1% of it, it's really worth about half that or maybe even a quarter of that. Now, let's not forget, anything that you have is only worth what someone's going to pay for it. And this company, let's call it Dog Brew, is looking to be publicly traded now.
But let's also not forget that since you bought in that the first time, they've done multiple equity raises, so if you don't buy back in to maintain your share, then you've lost less than your 1%.
I kind of decided to gloss over that because the big thing is that your average Wall Street or guy or British equivalent thereof. Listen, I'm not qualified to talk about any of this shit, and it turns out you don't need to be. The magic of social media at play here. But these people are exactly the kind of nerves that you envision, and they don't give a rat's ass about dropping plush cats on Westminster or giving the finger to Heineken while owning a significant amount, which James Watt does. They are immoral subhumans who, they just want numbers. And they will quickly figure out that what your company is actually worth. So you, the equity punk whose money was used to build up the company, suddenly finds themselves violently and abruptly shoved into the lion's pit that is stock trading, and they will buy the stock at what they think is what they think it's worth, which might be diddly squat. Essentially, it's basically a bait and switch, but with significantly more steps and with a certain amount of plausible deniability. Now, is it James Watt's fault that he purposely overvalued his company while crowdsourcing money? Yes. Yeah, I think that's...
Same with Modern Times.
Yeah, yeah. Will he cash the fuck out of it if he goes public? Yes.
Because he still owns the majority of the stock.
Does he give a fuck about what about a bunch of regular folk who believed in him and suddenly found a bunch of money that they put in worthless? Probably doesn't, but I mean, who can know the mind of a ceiling shagger? Add to that, the delusion, the BBC documentary, which we also talked about, because if you're lost about the constant references to trysts on top of a building, it's because the documentary revealed that James Watt,
liked to lay pipe on the roof.
I mean, basically his thing was to come to the United States, and with his Scottish accent, no doubt, and bunch of money. Invite pretty girls up to the top of his buildings for a little makeout session, which made his staff feel a little uncomfortable, which you could kind of understand. Like, it's not unreasonable for, like, oh, there's the boss with, like, two models, and now, and there he's, he did it on camera. He's like, the on security camera, like, yep, there he is, like, snogging on the roof there. And we're trying to close. Does someone want to go, like, oh, and pants are off. Okay.
Just leave the lights off, leave the door unlocked.
And the documentary also talked a lot about what we covered, especially, you know, especially when it comes to equity for punks, and was it, you know, I mean, the best you could say for it was that that
it started with good intentions,
and then he wanted to cash out, and the worst thing you can say about it is it's an outright scam. But one that's conducted in a way to be totally legal. The one new part about this is, yeah, as Watt threatened, he did sue the BBC for slander, but the British agency that covers such things, called Ofcom, ruled that the BBC has evidence, and Watt has none, and he's a spoiled billionaire brat. Case closed. So, where do we find ourselves? Well, the BrewDog IPO still hasn't happened. Fun fact, it just, my phone knows.
When you're entrenched in turmoil, it's kind of hard to take a company public.
Just a quick side note, I was immediately charmed because when I typed this in, my phone auto-corrected to IPA. So, which is not an unreasonable thing for my phone to, like, type in.
You meant this.
IPO, like, no, you meant IPA. I'm like, no, in this case, I meant initial public offering. I'm like, and my phone's like, you're not an adult. Come on, you meant beer.
You're an alcoholic.
It might happen this year, but I think we've said as much last year. The trouble that is that investors, again, are not a freewheeling bunch. They don't tend to like Agents of Chaos, which James Watt clearly is. And again, I mention Watt more by name than Dickie, because he seems to have retreated into the background, posting pictures of his dog until this all blows over and he can cash out and be done. He's very much just, I think he's just in a bunker somewhere just going, please God,
shut the fuck up.
I just want the goddamn money. here's another picture of my dog, okay? Just proof of life. It will be a few months before we even have last year's numbers, and since it's a private company, whose reporting is completely up to them, we we won't probably know the entire story until the IPO comes out, if it ever does. And yet, I found this article from a business leader back in August of last year, and reported that BrewDog was voted best place to work by the Sunday Times in 2023. And it mentioned that a lot of positives that the company has achieved happened mostly because things went south and they corrected. It includes wage boosts, which was a sticking point for Punks with a Purpose, which was an advocacy group that wrote an open letter to the company. We talked about them in one of the episodes, but you know, their thing was, you know, you promise a living wage, you don't do that. According to this article, they've made big progress as far as that goes. They've made big progress, you know, the firing of gay people. There's been according to the article, there's been a big push in inclusion. Watt has apparently made out with zero pretty girls on roofs, so he's restraining himself.
Or he's done it after everyone else has left.
Or, you know, but I guess that's all you have to really...
That's your right as, you know, the owner, right?
Listen, there's nothing wrong with getting it on a roof, if that's your thing.
Just
I don't
have
wanna...
some discretion.
It's just, it's doing it in a, it's doing it in front of your employees that's a little bit like, maybe don't.
Poor taste.
You know, but, you know, on your own time, listen, the, you know, fuck on a roof for by all means. It's probably fun. Fucking anywhere is fun, but, and I do, listen, I do feel what's missing out of the culture, we'll call it cancel culture, whatever, what, anyway, the minute they fuck up, boycott, shut them down, be done with them. But for me, if you don't provide an avenue for redeeming themselves, and what's the point of calling out misdeeds? There's a lot about BrewDog to be trepidatious about. And to be honest, the article in Business Leader really doesn't deal with specifics. So I don't know what the criteria for being voted best business to work for is. How much of, you know, when I'm reading the article, it didn't point to like this, you know, they actually made these changes, you know, this, you know, they didn't, for example, say, you know, now the minimum, you know, the base pay for the worker is $15 an hour up from 12. They just say improvements have been made. So whether or not that, whether, you know, how accurate that is, I don't know. That's the whole point. There is a whole lot that's a bit in question, and I don't know. I guess I'm watching with interest, which is not a satisfying way to end any story. So I certainly have no career as a commentator.
So BrewDog may be improving or may still be giant shitbags.
James Watt's a shitbag. I feel comfortable saying that. As far as BrewDog, the organization, I wouldn't give them money. I definitely would not. Even if an IPO does land, I definitely would not buy into it. I certainly would not put any money in equity for Punks. But if I find myself in a position where like, oh, they have BrewDog on draft, oh, sadly that might be the best thing they got. All right, I guess I'll have a BrewDog. That might be that. I'm at that point with BrewDog. Is
all right.
You know, they're just around fat tire for me, and I guess that's where that story ends.
All right,
Tyler, what's next?
Well.
You opened a beer while I was
incoherently rambling. Yeah,
that's what I do.
Tell me a little bit more.
You brought the Nani question exclamation exclamation point.
Yeah, it's a Japanese rice lager from Jester King out of Austin, Texas, 4.8%. Just nice, light, easy drinking rice lager. I mean.
I do not understand the draw of rice lagers over the past couple of years. I assume they sell somewhere, not at our establishment. Every time we've like, oh, this must be a thing, and we've put them on the shelf, and we look at them, and they look back at us, and we do this thing where I'm like, where are the people that want to buy you? And Then the rice lager says to me,
I don't know,
we're really popular. And to I go, okay, but no one's buying you. And they go, okay, but we're really popular. Where are the people who like that sort of thing? I think it's your fault. And I go, well, they're not here. I don't know what to do.
And then the customer that did walk in to ask a question sees Jeremy talking to a beer can and is like, I'm going to go somewhere else.
That's, you know. And
the guy's like, man, I really wish he'd stop talking to that can of rice lager that I want to buy, but he won't, so I'm gonna leave.
I'm gonna go somewhere else where he's not shaming a can of beer right in front of me.
But yeah, I mean, nothing super crazy, but
it's
what it needs to be.
This one is maybe it's because I just came off a Pilsner, but this one has like a little bit of like corny astringency, like there's, it's got a sweetness to it that's almost like corn like but which I know is doesn't make much sense. This is
I don't pick up much like corn like flavor, but
and a little bit more like almost like tannins, like astringent at the back.
I was gonna say, like, I was picking up like a little bit of like tannin or like toasty notes.
Toasty might be a better.
And so I don't know if they toast the rice or what they do on that process.
The adorable comic, written as a Japanese comic, is back to front. Has a you know, someone gazing at a beer cooler, then like having a minor like anime Nani, and then opening it up, chugging it all, and having a spiritual awakening, and then the earth is destroyed. I think I'm not.
Yeah, good enough. But found an article from VinePair talking about how different cultures around the world pour one out for their dearly departed. And it got me thinking, and I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that is. I mean, funerals and alcohol have kind of just been ingrained together.
I mean, any gathering of for any purpose is
happy or sad
has kind of been intertwined with alcohol. Weddings, births,
divorce, maybe, bachelorette party.
Whenever humans get together to do something with any purpose, the first thing they usually ask is, anyone bring beer?
Mm-hmm.
So
we're gonna kind of run through these, and we're starting off in Ireland with the Irish wake.
That's I mean, essentially, that's just obliterating yourself to the point where, in a famous Irish song, the corpse wakes up.
Yeah. So, I mean, in true Irish method, it is drinking drams of whiskey, often in the same room as the deceased body.
Yep.
It's also customary for the mourners to gather at the local pub after the burial service and tell more tales. The typical Irish wake in modern day usually lasts about a day at a remote site like a funeral parlor. Traditional wakes, though, would last a couple of days and take place at the home of the deceased or their family members.
I'm suddenly, there's an Irish song, The Day That Paddy Murphy Died. Telling the story of an Irish wake. Where they absolutely torment the widow by, among other things, setting the clock backwards so that when 3 o'clock rolled around, they argued it was 9. but the song sort of ends with they took the corpse to the graveyard, went back to the pub, went to the pub. And realized when they got to the pub that they left the corpse there.
But typically this involves dancing, mourning, and sharing stories of the deceased. So basically what you imagine a funeral to look like in Ireland.
I mean, the people know how to celebrate.
Then we're going down to Mexico for Dia de los Muertos, which Day of the Dead. As you can, most people have heard of it. There's a whole ritual that goes in. And I never really realized that there was alcohol involved in that process until...
Have you never known a Mexican?
Fair enough, but
I'm just saying.
But they construct a colorful photo-adorned ofrenda, festooned with sugar skulls and gifts to joyously welcome back their dearly departed, and usually will leave a bottle of alcohol close by to provide a symbolic toast for their dearly departed. In pre-Columbian times, the liquor was pulque.
Palque. I'm sitting there watching. I'm going, I think he's about to say palque, and I'm really curious to see how he's going to pronounce it.
So it's a funky fermented beverage derived from maguey plant sap.
You mean agave?
No. Maguey.
Huh. I have not... I think it's at some point... For some reason, I thought it was... For some reason, I had it in my head that palque was essentially like the beginnings of tequila. Like, you don't... Like, in the same way you make a beer... I mean, not exactly the same thing. I at one point in time, was curious to try to make one.
Yeah.
Here. I've not gotten around to it because it's one of those... traditionally, it would almost be like a wild fermented, so it'd be sour, and it's one of those, okay, well, I don't know how to exactly go about doing it. Also, I'd essentially be brewing from, like, agave nectar, since, you know, I don't... This,
have agave
plants. I was say, since not a lot of agave plant in Idaho, but I didn't... But maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree entirely, because I didn't know it was made.
I don't know.
But, yeah, in the same way that beer is kind of the precursor for whiskey.
Yeah.
I thought, I kind of had it in my head that palque was kind of the precursor for tequila.
Well, typically these days, a bottle of tequila or mezcal is what is used.
Fair enough.
Now we're going over to Korea, and I am going to butcher this one.
That's what I can't help you with. You are on your own, sir.
Sangnae? Sangmi? If you're Korean or celebrate this and I just butchered that, I'm sorry. You shouldn't be offended if you've listened to this podcast because we butcher everything. So,
there goes our one Korean listener.
But it is a tradition that blends grief and good times to commemorate the deceased. Alcohol is a key component in the process and can last a minimum of 3 days. That is a fucking bender.
I was not aware that the Koreans partied like that.
So, after friends and family swing by the funeral home to pay their respects, it's customary to get together and drink into the wee small hours to provide comfort and repel bad fortune. So, if you don't do it, you're wishing bad fortune upon the family.
I do that. I do that all the time. Nah, honey, I'm not drunk. I'm drunk, but only to keep bad things from happening to the family, like, for example,
so
vomit appearing on the floor.
During the funeral procession, pallbearers will stop by the Nyohe, a roadside memorial that attendees adorn with wine, meat, and other offerings to pay final respects and prevent themselves from being haunted by the deceased. So if you don't give the deceased alcohol, they will haunt you. I can get behind this trend right there.
I'm going ahead and make that. That's what's going to happen. When I die, if there's no booze, I'm haunting your ass.
So, after the burial, the guests then carry out another round of food and wine offerings to help the dead settle in on the other side. These events are much rarer these days, as cremations are now more common in Korea, and large feasts typically replace the offering ceremony. So, now we're going to Scandinavia for the Viking funeral.
Woohoo! Oh, God.
You can imagine how this is going to go.
I'll tell you. Describe this, and I'll tell you why I suddenly busted out laughing.
So, ancient Vikings took their alcohol seriously when someone passed. They usually had days-long post-funeral feasts involving copious amounts of mead and ale that were believed to help propel the deceased soul towards the afterlife peacefully. So by getting rip-roaring drunk, it helped them reach peace in the afterlife.
I didn't think reaching the afterlife peacefully was a Viking thing.
Yeah, right?
I mean, you're essentially going to Valhalla, which is near as I can tell, just an endless party. What, you go there peacefully?
So, Vikings also turn alcohol...
It's like the Hell's Angels showing up at a bar peacefully.
So, they also turned alcohol into economic leverage. So, the ritual was known as Sahand. Sahand? I don't know. Again.
Can't help you.
Yeah. But 7 days after a person passed, a funeral ale needed to be consumed by the loved one's family before they could claim their inheritance.
I do appreciate, like, being forced to drink in
copious amounts to get your inheritance. That is going in my will. My kid is killing kegs.
Oh, God.
And they're going to, then when they see there's no actual inheritance, they're going to be like, what the fuck? I'm going to be like, well, you at least got drunk on my dime.
Actually, I had to pay for it, Dad. Yeah, well, you know, you're here to pay for it because of me.
Some records suggest these rituals sometimes ended in violence. Shocking.
You think?
So just one constant party because you have to have a funeral for the guy that died at the party.
I just imagine Vikings is, again, Hell's Angels, but without, like, the societal constraints.
The celebratory aspects of the gatherings remain, and alcohol is still a welcome funeral guest in Scandinavian countries. But usually with less violence now.
Yeah, yeah, right. I've met some Swedes. I don't buy it. That is a whole country of pretty blonde people that is on edge.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we're heading over to Greece, and part of the reason why I picked this is I really just wanted to pour beer on your floor.
Are we doing this?
I thought about it.
Because you wouldn't be. Because first of all, you know that this is not the that would no. not be the first time beers ended up on this floor.
So. The Greeks were the first ones to invent, basically, pour one out for the homies. They beat Tupac to it. They used to pour booze onto the ground to honor the dead. Long before hip-hop made it cool. So, ritualistic libation spilling was a bona fide thing throughout the ancient civilizations, ranging kind of the whole gambit. They embrace this ritual by giving it a modernized spin rather than using water, milk, or honey. They preferred to pour out wine to both remember the dead and honor the Greek gods and heroes.
See, it has to do with the sacrifices. I think even there was a pouring out of wine in, like, the Odyssey.
And the Iliad! Way to beat me to the punch!
There you go. See? I know my classics.
And the Romans eventually copied this and codified it into their own civilization.
They basically copied Greece. I mean, they were very much the.
Now we're going to Mother Russia. With vodka and black bread. They would leave a single slice of black rye bread on top of a glass of vodka at the person's gravesite. It's apparently an important Russian ritual that closes a symbolic and devastating circle. When a new...
That's so fucking Russian.
Like, this was the one where I was like, this is the most fucked up out of all of them.
I mean, leave it to the Russians to be like, this completes the circle. All things are meaningless. We all die.
Typically, when you create a new friendship in Russia, it's traditional to break black bread to formalize the forging of a new relationship. And these situations, typically vodka shots follow as the bread to neutralize the grains.
Well, because I think all things follow, vodka follows all things in Russia. I believe when you get off like a bus or something, they hand you a shot of vodka.
So this ritual reverses, the gravesite ritual reverses the concept as one final gesture that acknowledges the importance of the deceased. Or the deceased had on the individual who's placing the offering there.
You've cost me bread. Here's one more, you fucker.
So it typically carried out by Russian Jews, but has been embraced by some of the Russian Orthodox Church. And it perfectly highlights how the Russians use vodka for everything. I was a little disappointed, like, the second line in, like, New Orleans wasn't kind of intertwined into it. I know it's not fully, like, alcohol-related, but, I mean, having a parade through a fucking city, just, there's gonna be alcohol there. I mean, New Orleans is kind of the one spot in America that puts the fun in a funeral.
Yeah, and there's alcohol everywhere. I mean,
it's New Orleans.
I mean, the thing is there's no point in having alcohol there. It'd be like bringing a glass of water to the swimming pool. Okay.
Yeah. So now that you know, pour one out for the homies. Leave some bread. Leave some vodka. Or put it in your will that your children have to fucking consume a copious amount of alcohol to get their inheritance.
Our kids are fucked.
Jeremy, what have we got next?
Computers are attacking our beer news now. It was only a matter of time.
Terminators.
The sparky electronic bastards have always had it in for a decent pint. You wouldn't believe how my computer reacts. Spill one or two pints on the keyboard and fuck.
And it fights back.
Don't work no more. Fucking selfish, if you ask me. This comes from the BBC by...
Computers these days.
It comes from the BBC by Imran Rahman Jones. I want to pause to say that
You did really good.
Thank you. I just want to say, it's heartening to share a surname with someone with a name that's clearly removed from Anglo-Saxon. You know, it's not that uncommon either. The Jones name pops up in some fantastic places. Listen, the Joneses fuck, okay? We fuck well, and we fuck widely. It's probably...
You'll fuck anything.
It's probably why everyone was trying to keep up with us back in the 50s, but I digress. Duval fell victim to a ransomware attack earlier this month that shut down the brewery.
Who clicked the phishing link?
Shut down breweries both in Belgium and in Kansas City, which the biggest thing I got out of this article was I didn't know they had a brewery out in Kansas City. I mean, I know
Boulevard.
I know they own Boulevard, but I didn't make the connection that they probably also brewed Duval there.
Yeah.
Also, I've seen their facility, and I have some complicated questions about their packaging, but I digress. Duval comes in a very unique bottle.
Yes.
I don't see those bottles anywhere at Boulevard. I saw a canning line.
But it may...
I'm sure there's a plausible explanation.
Or just the facility only produces the American stuff. Because they own more than just Boulevard, too. And so, their facility may have just went down.
I'm just saying that I have complicated questions about their packaging, but that's hardly the thing.
Here nor there.
It's still unclear as to how supply might be affected. They say there's a very detailed article about the entire situation, and I found it. And the problem is, it's written in fucking Dutch. So...
Google Translate that bitch.
I got nothing. Well, I didn't even think about doing that because when I found this story, I was already drunk last night. So,
I mean, if you had a cool phone like I did, it'll automatically translate something for you while you're reading it.
I do not have that kind of, apparently I don't. I just looked at that like, that's a fucking booga booga language that I don't know.
That's a booga booga. Jeremy, you're North Idaho showing.
So, actually, it's one of those where I was like, I could probably read that if given enough time and probably a significantly less.
If I was six beers less, I could definitely read that.
I could probably try to suss that out. But the point is that will your supply of Duval be interrupted? Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, that's where that story ends, too. This is a good episode for me where I just kind of trail instead of
wait till the shit show that will be our final episode.
How drunk are we getting?
Well, we'll be drinking Malort that day.
That's a definite thing that's happening now. That's not.
I confirmed with Ben. He still has some for us.
There's
so.
No way to negotiate out of this.
Apparently there's barrel aged Malort too. And you would think it would make it a little better, but I heard it just is a smoky version of the same shitty liquid.
You know what also has to happen?
What?
I still have that one bottle of that first mead I ever made. The one that destroyed that bottle share. We gotta crack it.
And we'll have to open some Gem State Brewing beer.
So, shit, yeah, this is... That last episode's probably going to be like 2 hours of just...
incoherent rambling. But yeah.
All right, Tyler, what's...
Well, if you're a college basketball fan...
I am not.
We know. I'm talking to our listeners who actually pay attention to sports.
Okay.
Coors Light has the thing for you. They said, why the fuck does Advent calendars have to only be Christmas?
Because Advent is Advent means that period before Christmas.
No. So they decided they were going to create a basketball Advent calendar for March Madness, one of the greatest times of year in the sports calendar. I mean, there's a reason every dude gets a vasectomy this time of year, because opening weekend of March Madness, there's so many good college basketball games going morning to night. You can just do nothing but sit on the couch with a bag of frozen peas on your frozen peas and...
I didn't know that was a thing. Like, oh, March Madness is hitting, the time to snip the boys?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Then number two is the Masters Golf Weekend.
I kind of did it random. There's no like television time for me, so I just kind of happened randomly.
Well, you missed out.
Okay. Well, I know. Why didn't you tell me? Now
you never asked.
I feel like I should go back and do it again.
Yeah.
Like reconnect this shit. Are you trying to have a kid? No, I want to reconnect it and then disconnect it so I can ice my balls while watching basketball. Something I don't give a rat's ass about.
So they're launching a 21-day Advent-inspired calendar for college basketball fans to enjoy. So the quote says, between busted brackets, fairy tale stories, and game upsets, March is definitely not chill for college basketball fans. So Coors Light doesn't want a busted bracket to break you, so we're chilling through the countdown to chill. Through our countdown to chill calendar, inspiring fans to choose chill throughout the tournament. They also noted that a chance of a perfect bracket of the 64-team tournament is a 1 in a 120.2 billion chance. Meaning there's going to be a lot of upsets. You're going to be upset. You're going to have a ruined bracket. And you need something to drink to calm that. So they decided not only to do that, but doing a couple other options for the March Madness tournament. So starting March 11th at noon Eastern. So we're a couple days past it. I'm sure it's already sold out. $21 each in honor of the 21-day tournament. You can go to shopcoorslight.com. Shop.coorslight.com and purchase one of these calendars. They're also hosting chill giveaways to keep college basketball fans cheering, including ESPN Plus subscriptions, Coors Light merch, and custom limited edition Coors Light sneakers. Keep an eye on their social media channels to see what all fun stuff they are releasing.
I was just trying to see if I could check on that for you. But then I ran into the there we go. Okay. Let's see here. If it's still available,
click that top banner. That's the fucking advent calendar.
It appears to be still available.
Click on it. Can we order it?
Nope. Sold out. Never mind.
Bastards.
So, yeah, that information is useless to you.
But...
Except for the fact that you know that it exists.
Yeah.
You could have had that...
if you were more on the ball.
If you weren't relying for us...
To find this for you.
Yeah. So I guess that's a lesson in trusting us.
Yeah. So if someone did get this, reach out to your rep who sells you beer from that distributor. See if they can get you one, Jeremy.
That distributor is basically a Three Stooges skit in perpetuity. I don't think they could get me I'm not completely sure they could get me just a case of Coors Light if I asked them.
Jeremy, what do we got next?
Beer will save us all news now. I got this from Newsweek, which surprised me because, listen, I started following Newsweek because they were doing a lot of dubious stories about the Bud Light Dylan Mulvaney incident.
The event?
The event. I'm sorry. I named the thing. The event. If you work for Stein Brewing or any other Budweiser distributor, I apologize for the PTSD that I suddenly inflicted upon you.
Before we get into this, should we talk about we just cracked?
We're now drinking the Freem Czech Dark Lager.
Freem has been on a heater with some killer lagers lately.
I mean, do they do bad work? I have not had a...
I've had a couple of their beers where I've been like, not my favorite. Like, before they were in town and the bottle shop we worked at got some in through a loophole and they got really mad about it.
All right, that was a whole...
That barrel-aged Belgian stout wasn't the biggest fan of.
Yeah, who knows how old it was, too.
True.
So Czech Dark Lager is of interest to me, because when I try to make one, theirs is better than mine. Let's start with that.
You don't say.
Hey, I make some damn good beer. Fuck you, clown. How to approach it is kind of odd because you could either approach it like as a really hoppy lager, but just dark in color, or you almost approach it as like a lager porter.
Mm-hmm.
And this almost tastes to me like the latter option. Like it's got a little bit of roastiness. It's got a touch of caramel. I do get those like spicy, like Czech hops in the back, but, a lagered porter is not a bad description for this beer.
No, 5.3%. So you're not looking at that Baltic porter style though, where it's that higher alcohol typically. So, no, very good. It's something you can drink by the liter.
Indeed. Any Czech or German beer, that is a requirement.
And I mean, if you can't do that, it's not true to style.
It's not, it is not correct. Can you, I think when I was doing the style guidelines, someone said, if you don't think you could drink this by the liter, then it's wrong. I could drink five boots of this. And
then stumble my ass home.
Or in my case, make notes for an episode of It's All Beer.
Yeah.
It was a fun night last night. Anyway, so the incident. Newsweek never went full Fox News rabid insanity, but they were just enough to be like, are you trying to be the thinking man's Fox News? Because I don't think you understand your market, because one is kind of a violation of the other. But anyway, the problem with recycling electronic waste is that there's just a bunch of shit in there. There are wires that might be made of copper connecting to some doodads that are aluminum. They're connected to something that might be adamantium for all I fucking know. There's a lot of different shit in there. It needs to be separated before it can be made useful.
Or vibranium. Is that what the one from the Marvel movies?
I don't know. I don't watch the Marvel movies either. Listen, you know, I don't. It's hard to stress how cut off from my own culture that I am. I read a lot of books, which most people's eyes glaze over at that point in time.
I like reading books.
Yeah, you're the exception. Most people are like, you know, did you see such and such? And I go, I really don't. I didn't watch TV. And for a lot of people, they go, I might as well say, I'm not into food. I just don't like it. I never found the need for it.
Heck, I found enemas to be much better nutritionally.
And they go, well, did you see such and such? Like, no, I don't think you understand how much I don't care. Anyway, it turns out that brewer's yeast is pretty good at this shit.
Chewing up shit? No way!
Separating out metal. So, the article says that brewer's yeast is a byproduct of beer making, but
kinda.
It's both a byproduct and...
an ingredient?
Responsible for the product. You brew a wort, which is what we call beer that's unfermented.
Sugar water.
Yeah. You add yeast, and it makes beer. Remarkable shit.
And then you get rid of the yeast, and...
you do end up with more yeast than you started with, so at some point in time it is a byproduct. But anyway, now, the exact mechanism for how this works is a little vague. I even went to the journal article that it linked, and it was about as incomprehensible as the Dutch. But as near as I can tell, You add brewer's yeast, and I'm thinking some heavy sludge here. You add that to a circuit board, I'm guessing, and it starts pulling a decent amount of the copper, the nickel, the zinc, and the lead.
I'm co-fermenting a beer with a fucking circuit board.
it pulls those metals out somehow. The journal says adds. I'm gonna say you add brewery yeast, because I get the sense there's more to it than just, like, pouring sludge over a circuit board, but...
Yeast dump on a fucking...
I can't stress this, I'm not qualified to comment on such things, and yet you're listening to me. I think this is, again, this is...
Neither of us are, but...
All eight of you, you are wasting your lives.
But we appreciate it.
Thank you very much. But anyway, but I'm also not blaming the entire thing on Jewish space lasers. So, you know, there's a middle ground I'm treading.
I'm missing something there, but...
I'm not just making it up.
Oh.
Jewish space lasers was, like, the nearest thing I could think of for just...
Well, I figured it was something like InfoWars or something. He's like, here's what's going on. There's these Jewish space lasers.
And that's how the yeast is doing it. The yeast is in cahoots with them. It's all part of the plan, man.
They own the yeast. Well, anyone can own the yeast. You just have to buy the pitch. I mean...
I was listening to a comedy show earlier today, and he pissed off because the quality of conspiracy theories has fallen so much lately.
It has.
He constructed a conspiracy theory randomizer, and had a... It basically had a what is what is it happening to, what is happening, and who is responsible. So he spun it a couple times, and the joke was it kind of came along the line I think one of them it was like completely random. So he goes, let's see, chemtrails are JFK is being sprayed into the atmosphere by the Jews. And the running joke was that the third one
is always,
the Jews.
Honestly, like, you throw that on 4chan, and you could probably gain traction in about 3 to 5 days, maybe an hour, if you pay some, like, clickbait bots to boost it for you.
You don't have to pay bots. That's the whole point of them.
No, but you pay the dude over in India who runs all the bots and...
Who's all in turn run by the Jews? So,
who in turn shut down Duval? Boom!
It's all connected. We've done this.
The Jews spraying JFK took down Duval.
Wow,
that is fucked up.
point is, great day for humanity. we live now in a world where you can take your old iPhone or laptop or whatever to your local brewery, and they'll shove it into their fermenters and make it an electrical fire IPA and send the metal to your local recycling plant. That's totally what's going to happen. That's the future. We're on the precipice.
All I can think of is that fucking brewery we talked about that was doing, like, the AI-inspired beers and, like, the, like, whole computer theme thing is going to start doing that.
Tyler, anything else for us today?
If you live here in the Treasure Valley, the brewery's opening a tap room here in Meridian.
Yeah, so remember way back when I told you that that I had been talking to a brewery moving in, and I said I have to be a little bit quiet about it yet.
Oh, and then I said, oh, tell me after the podcast, and then we forgot about it? Yeah.
Well, you forgot about it. I'm like, I wonder if he's going to ask. You never did? Yeah. Oh. Now you know.
Well, I had heard the rumor a couple weeks ago at an event, and I was like, I mean, it doesn't quite add up, and it still doesn't really add up, like, why you're opening in Meridian, and especially that spot, like, but that's just me.
Location wise, it's not terrible because
it's not good.
But there's nothing around it, as far as a brewery goes or a beer place goes.
Yeah, but it's a bitch to get in and out of. There's going to be very limited neighborhood traffic. I was doing an event at Topgolf the other night, and, like, the space isn't big.
I mean, but also Topgolf gets a lot of people down there.
Yeah, but you're not going to poach the...
You tell me they won't stop by for another beer after. I mean, my clientele is primarily crotchety retired men, and they live at Topgolf. That's and they come
I think
and they come to my place for a beer afterwards.
I think the brewery, they have a lot of work to educate customers on what they have available.
Also, it's not quite the name they were back in the. It's you know they
and a lot of their like. Stuff that the beer nerds are going to clamor for
is illegal in Idaho.
It's illegal in the state.
So that's going
to because it's over the ABV limit.
So
and it's not like they're doing production here, so they're going to have to buy it from the distributor.
Well, and the brewery is distributed here, but their distributor, the same one that does Coors Light, that I said probably couldn't get. I mean, they'd have a decent. Trouble getting me a case of Coors Light if I ordered it. They brought in some and I've not seen them since. So
well, they didn't bring in some. They in a fuck up put it on the list, and so by Idaho law, it was supposed to pass through from their Vancouver, Washington warehouse to a beer festival.
That was ecliptic. I thought. Did they do it again?
So when everyone got that random drop of the brewery,
yeah.
It was supposed to go over to NABA.
Oh my god.
And they put it on the price list and people saw it and ordered it and they're like, fuck. By Idaho law, they can get fined and in trouble for not selling something that's on their price list, even though they don't distribute in this part of the state. And so
they did that exact same thing with Ecliptic a few years earlier.
Yeah, but Ecliptic's not with them.
No, they are in some parts of the state, or in Vancouver.
In Vancouver, but in Idaho, they're with a different distributor.
Well, this is before Ecliptic came into town. This was back in 2019, 2020, summer. Yeah. All I know was what you're describing happened before, yes. And the funny thing was that was a colossal fuck up at the time, and I can't believe. And that's why I say they probably couldn't get me a case of Coors Light.
So. Yeah. So I was like, are they going to stick with that distributor or are they going with a different distributor in this part? We'll see. But yeah. So if you're a beer fan, you got the brewery coming to town sometime summer of this year.
And after trashing a distributor, I don't know if anybody from that distributor listens to us, but they know what they're about. They wouldn't argue.
I was going to say any of their employees would be like, yeah, you're right.
And their owner doesn't listen because he's too busy shoving money into his ear going, I can't hear you. La, 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 la. This has been It's All Beer. I don't even know if we've got two more episodes. We got one more episode. Because we were taking next week off, correct?
Correct.
Because you got shit to do. We got one more regular episode, and then what might well be
the final episode for all of us, because we may die.
I mean, if you want to tune in, I mean, to an extreme version of our tasting. Yeah, I'll tell you about that later. if you want to turn to an extreme version of our tasting episodes or our holiday episodes, yeah, that might be it. I don't know. When's the last time we got truly shit faced on this podcast?
When Counting Line closed down.
Oh, that's because we were already drinking.
We went to the closing.
And we came here. We were already fucked up.
Then I went home. My wife drove me back down to County Line.
Yes,
I closed the place down.
Good times, good times. Anyway, look forward to that. And as of right now, I'm still thinking the podcast goes dark. Nobody's popped up saying, "Oh my God, yeah, I'd love to do that." And again, I'm sort of on the it's run its course. Moving on to the next project, but convince me of otherwise. I suppose if you're listening to this, no, I really want this to continue. Or maybe I think I'll leave the or at least leave the feed out there, and who knows? Maybe we come back at some point in time, or I come back and revisit it. But that's the kind of plan of now. But before then, you get to listen to two middle-aged men get absolutely.
I'm not middle-aged yet.
How old are you?
31.
You're close enough.
Not middle age yet.
You know, you got 4 more years before you're officially a middle age. So, all right. So one middle aged man and one
almost middle,
and one guy desperately clinging to the last threads of youth. you have a child now. You've got more gray in your hair than I do.
Yes, I do.
And that's be quite enough from us. I'm Jeremy Jones.
I'm Tyler Zimmerman.
Have a beer.
Have fun.